Penguin Random House Audio presents Jefferson's Daughters, Three Sisters, White and Black in a Young America by Katherine Carrison. Read for you by Tavia Gilbert. Introduction. Summer, 1789. It was a deceptively quiet Sunday in Paris. The very air of these summer months seemed laden with menace, as news of peasant revolts in the countryside filtered into the city, and apprehensive Parisians watched the king position his troops to defend it. Political tumult had convulsed the city that summer as well, as the king, nobles, and bishops had stridently resisted the urgings of commoners to join them in their newly formed National Assembly. But finally, in a clear nod to the people's will, Louis XVI conceded, and a crisis appeared to have been averted. As the carriage of Thomas Jefferson, American minister to the French court, rattled through the streets that day, he was confident that with its victory complete, the assembly was in complete and undisputed possession of the sovereignty. Unbeknownst to Jefferson, however, that very day infuriated aristocrats had forced the king to backpedal. As news of this change began to be known at Paris about 1 or 2 o'clock, Jefferson later recalled, the city began to stir again. Passing through the elegant Place Louis XV, now the Place de la Concorde, Jefferson saw, with a start, 300 mounted German and Swiss mercenaries amassed along one side. Along the other, an angry crowd had gathered and posted themselves on and behind large piles of stones, large and small, collected in that place for a bridge which was to be built adjacent to it. Jefferson found himself in the thick of it. No sooner had he passed through than their fury erupted as the people pelted the cavalry with the rocks. On the front lines, the Germans drove their horses toward the crowd, but were resolutely beaten back. Leaving one of their number dead, they abandoned the square. It was, Jefferson recognized in retrospect, the signal for universal insurrection. 2 days later, on July 14th, another Paris crowd would storm the Bastille to arm themselves for the fight. Jefferson had been in Paris since 1784. After his wife's premature death, Congress had asked him to represent the United States at the peace table with Great Britain, and he grasped at the appointment as a drowning man would a rope. Escaping the painful memories etched into the very landscape of his home at Monticello, Jefferson crossed the ocean to France with his 12-year-old daughter, Martha. 3 years later, Martha's younger sister, Maria, joined them, accompanied by her slave, Sally Hemings. By that fateful summer of 1789, Paris had changed them all. Famous for his role in drafting the American Declaration of Independence, Jefferson was sought after by French revolutionary moderates who persuaded him to host meetings as they hammered out their ideas to reform their government. But Paris was also the place where he had adopted the aristocratic wigs and elegant silk suits made fashionable by the French, and where he had fallen in love with their art, architecture, furniture, and books. Like her father, Martha took an eager interest in the political ferment. Sporting a revolutionary cockade, she was the envy of her friends when General Lafayette, riding through the streets of Paris, recognized her with a chivalrous doff of his hat. Even little Maria was changed. Initially left behind in Virginia, she had not wanted to go to Paris when Jefferson wrote to have her join him. But once arrived, The 9-year-old became so acclimated to the beauties of Paris that she broke down in tears on their return to Virginia as she surveyed the burnt-out ruins of Norfolk, their port of arrival. Sally Hemings had learned how to care for Jefferson's silk suits and linens, as well as the fashionable clothing of his daughters. She also learned French. By this pivotal moment in French, and Jefferson family history then, she had learned marketable skills and had seen the possibility of a way of life that was different from the slavery she had known in Virginia. In the fall of 1789, however, she would agree to join Jefferson and his daughters as they boarded the Clermont, bound for Virginia. But what kind of nation awaited them? As the newly elected president, George Washington, assembled his government, he faced the challenge of transforming the political system inscribed on paper in the Constitution into a working and workable government. Chief among the questions to be resolved was who, exactly, was included in the ringing phrase, "We the People," with which that document opened. In this age of revolutions, the idea of independence did not only refer to a national government free of monarchical ties, it also meant individual self-determination. But who was eligible to claim that right? More particularly, what changes might the American Revolution begin to effect, especially for women, free blacks, and slaves? As the Jefferson Party sailed home, they would have pondered these questions in very different ways. But Paris remained imprinted upon them all forever, shaping the courses of their lives and the choices they would make. Author's note. 18th century naming, spelling, and punctuation conventions can pose a challenge to 21st century listeners. Thomas Jefferson's daughters, named Martha and Mary at birth, were called different names during their lifetimes. Martha was called Patsy as a girl, and Martha in adulthood, and Mary was called Polly as a child, and later Maria, although she continued to sign her letters Mary. For the listener's convenience, however, I will use their adult names, Martha and Maria, throughout the text. 18th century spellings were not yet standardized. To remain faithful to the original, I have retained the writer's spelling. Where needed for clarity, I have silently corrected quotations for 21st century punctuation, and I have supplied the full spelling when the writer used an abbreviation. For ease of listening in some quotations, I have sometimes inserted my own words in square brackets. Chapter 1. First Monticello, 1770. A favorite tale, retold countless times at the Jefferson family hearth, was the story of Martha Wales Jefferson's arrival at Monticello as a new bride. A beautiful young widow, Martha married Thomas Jefferson at her father's estate in Charles City County, just up the James River from Williamsburg, on New Year's Day in 1772. The beaming couple were well matched. At 6 feet 2 inches tall, Jefferson carried his lanky frame erect, towering over his bride. Although petite, Martha carried her slim figure with the elegance of a queen. She had auburn hair and hazel eyes that sparkled with wit and vivacity. Her groom was likewise fair, although his red hair was lighter and his eyes blue. Although no one ever described Jefferson as handsome, one of his earliest biographers said his face shone with intelligence, with benevolence, and with the cheerful vivacity of a happy, hopeful spirit. A young lawyer and planter, Jefferson was just beginning his political career, having won his seat in the
sample complete. Ready to continue?